time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, the Ghost Crew makes a final desperate attempt to rescue Kanan from the Empire. Who will fall? There will be the return of a Clone Wars fan favorite, a new enemy arrives, and my evil boyfriend dies. I'm not ready, Chris. My boyfriend dies. Talking Fire Across the Galaxy this week. How are you doing, Chris?
We don't see the body, so...
No, he did. We know he did. We don't see the body because he, like, vaporized in the explosion. Chris, can I tell you... Okay. Can I tell you my... You know how you put a little song for the episodes at the beginning of the episode?
Yes.
Can I tell you my stupid idea for this episode?
Yes.
And then you'll have to let me explain.
Okay.
Tub Thumpin' by Chumbawamba.
Okay, I like that song.
The reason, because it's I get knocked down, but I get up again, that is because Kanan and Grande have been fighting all season, and Kanan has kept losing until he won this episode.
He's like Chumbawamba. I like Chumbawamba. Our band used to do that. When I was in my punk rock band, GAD, we used to just spontaneously do that song to annoy audiences because they all hated it. And it was really easy to play.
That song was, it came out when I was kind of youngish. And when I was very little, I knew, for me as a little kid, piss was a bad word. And so I wasn't allowed to say it. So when that song came out, I was like, oh, it has a bad word in it. But my older sister was like, actually, you know, like it means like drinking in a British thing. And I was like, oh, then it's not a bad word. And I said it, and my mom was like, it's still a bad word for you. So I wasn't allowed to sing that word until I was much older. And I felt like such a big kid. So I was like, pissing the night away. I felt like such a big kid when I could actually was finally allowed to sing that song.
It was considered a really stupid pop song, but they were really, like they were a very political band. Like, very, very active, like, anarchist people that ran
outside it. Outside of that one song, I knew nothing about them.
No, nobody does.
But weren't they, like, really big in, like, Europe?
Well, that explains the tub thumping you guys heard at the beginning of the show.
I get knocked down, but I get up again. Kanan's gonna beat Grande. I get knocked down. Yay. I'm so proud of Kanan. So, well, how have you been since we recorded yesterday?
Oh, fine.
Yeah, we're doing two this weekend. So Chris and I haven't talked in. Wow. That's grammar. Since yesterday. But for you guys, it's been a week. Are you guys okay? Do you have a good week? We can't hear your answer. So now you're just talking to your headphones.
Yeah, like you always do.
Gene.
Seek help.
Gene's like, guys.
Gene.
So did you like this episode?
I did.
I like this episode too.
I figured you would. I'm surprised we don't have 20 pages of notes on this one. Well, actually, there's not. It's just, we'll get. I don't think there's a super lot to talk about character wise, because that sort of all the setup happened last time.
Yeah.
But this is all the shit coming to a head. So it's like action.
I mean, honestly, my two biggest things, character-wise notes, is Grande and Ahsoka.
Yeah, right.
That's all I have. because so much of this show is just action. Just action, action, and more action.
Yeah. Well, you know how I feel about that.
You know my kitty, Zeb.
Yes. Is he still in the same place?
Huh?
Is he still in the same place?
What do you mean by that? He lives with us.
I saw a picture of the video you put up today on Facebook.
I don't know. He might be. He's so lazy. Like, my Zeb. I have a kitty named Zeb, and he's named after Zeb from Rebels. And because originally, his original name was Ventress, because we thought he was a girl, and we found out he was a boy, and so I named him Zeb, because he's a big fucking cat. Like, you pick up this cat, and he has mass to him. He has mass. Like, he is big.
Can I make a prediction for Zeb?
What?
He's going to be a big old sausage.
I started calling him a meatloaf.
He's going to fatten up like this is something I find that happens to a lot of cats that were outside, just sort of free roaming cats. And when they find the home, they go, well, I'm going to eat and sleep.
That's pretty much all he does. He plays a little bit, like he has a little kick toy, and he likes to chase our old ladies. Our Spokes and Carmilla are not happy there's a cat. They outlived two other cats and a pug. They are not happy there's a young cat in the house. And so pretty much he just eats, sleeps, and like occasionally chases the girls and corner them, and that's been fun because they're all fighting for dominance, and Carmilla and Spokes are two old ladies, and they're like, why'd you bring this child onto our lawn? Because they were fine when he was just outside, like they would sit together, but they are not fine that he's in the house. So, but yeah, Zeb's turning into a big old meatloaf.
Yeah, we'll check in on his body mass index in a year.
We think he might be part Maine Coon, because when he first showed up, we think he's a teenager cat, because when he first showed up, he was much smaller, and he was much thinner. And so we were thinking, like, he maybe had been about a year old, but now I'm thinking he might have been a little bit younger than that, because he's been hanging out here for about 6 months, and he went from this small, much, he was smaller than our other cats, and now he's twice the size of them.
Yeah, they can do that.
Yeah, like, we think he's part Maine Coon, because he's just a big fucking cat.
BFC.
Huge. He's still learning that hands are not toys, though. He keeps, like, if you don't pet him quite right, he'll try and bite and scratch your hands. So, we're still learning that, but he's a big... So, there's your Zeb update, guys. Zeb's doing quite well. He's adjusting to in-house life well, because all he does is eat and sleep. And he goes outside to eat the food outside, and he comes back in and sleep. That's all he does. He's retired on Lasan with Callus.
Yep.
Lirasan. All right, are you ready to get into this episode?
I am.
All right, here we go. Fire Across the Galaxy is the 15th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on March 2nd, 2015. It was written by Simon Kinberg and directed by Dave Filoni. Some extra information for you. It is revealed in this episode that Fulcrum is none other than Clone Wars character Ahsoka Tano. Ashley Eckstein reprises her role voicing the character, and had voiced her all of season one uncredited. I'm sorry, my brain didn't process that sentence. There was only, I think, one time that they used somebody else to hide Ashley's voice. The stolen TIE fighter dates back to the episode Fighter Flight. Originally, it was going to be seen a few times throughout the series as a background project secretly undertaken by Ezra and Sabine. One example was Path of the Jedi, when Ezra was running late for Jedi practice at the beginning of the episode. All references to the TIE were edited out to save time in individual episodes, and also to maximize the impact of its reveal here. The TIE fighter's paint job includes icons seen on Sabine's helmet, Kanan's arm guard, Hera's leku, Ezra's jacket, Zeb's armor, and Chopper's face, thus making it a representative of the team as a whole. The Imperial Star Destroyer engine room is a similar look and layout to the Jedi Cruiser engine room. It was inspired by the engine room seen aboard the super-dimensional fortress in the Macross series. The Rebel crewman's costume is based on Ralph McQuarrie illustrations of Rebels done for the original Star Wars. Ahsoka carries a slightly curved lightsaber handle that more resembles a weapon of a samurai. This next note, I just couldn't remember if I said it at one point, so here we go. The Grand Inquisitor's spinning lightsaber was an unused concept for the video game The Force Unleashed. Furthermore, a similar saber attributed to General Grievous was previously made into a toy by Hasbro as part of the Clone Wars toy line. In Rebels Recon for this episode, they talked about how they brought Vader into animation. They didn't want to mess with his design too much because it's so iconic, but his helmet was redesigned closer to Ralph McQuarrie pictures. They also said they always frame Vader shots looking from below. They never wanted to look down on Vader unless it was with the Emperor. They went on to talk about Ahsoka's return. Dave Filoni said that they debated bringing her back in the beginning, and they wanted to give these new characters time to develop, and did not want this to be thought as a continuation of Clone Wars. Filoni also commends the really smart fans for figuring out right away it was Ahsoka, saying, "I don't underestimate the ingenuity that our fans have. Some even remastered the Fulcrum voice, and it sounded a lot like Ashley Eckstein when they decrypted it." But he also notes that it wasn't always Ashley playing Fulcrum. For Ahsoka's look in Rebels, Filoni said that he had been trying to get Ahsoka a pseudo-samurai look, which is what her armor is based on now. And I just want to note, when we covered our post-Clone Wars episodes, I also talked about some pictures that were released of Ahsoka in unfinished episodes, and her costume at that time was a little bit of a samurai inspiration in those looks. Filoni said that he wanted to give her armor a look that she found it, like she went to an old Jedi temple and found the armor. Even though her lightsabers don't ignite in this episode, Filoni explains that her blades are white to show her non-affiliation with neither Jedi nor Sith. In a funny little bit, Ashley Eckstein said Dave Filoni keeps her in the dark about a lot of Ahsoka's stories, so when fans ask her where Ahsoka is, she goes, "Oh, Ahsoka's just eating cupcakes and living on a pony farm." I laughed when she said that. And just to wrap up some notes that we from the season, because we talked about this at some point in the season, I don't remember when though. In Rebels Recon for Siege of Lothal, Pablo Hidalgo answered some fan questions, and Pablo clarifies that Ezra was born on Empire Day when Palpatine declared the Empire, and Padme at the time was at that event. She gives birth to Luke and Leia about 2 days prior, so Ezra is about 2 days older than Luke and Leia. We had been talking about that. I came across that, and I was just like, "Oh, hey, there's an answer." Woo! Yoda, hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Still here.
I've
been here, just quietly watching and waiting.
I'm still standing. Yeah. That's fine, Chris or Yoda. You don't have to comment on my singing. It's not great.
Feeling like true survivor. Feeling like a little kid. Yoda knows his Elton John.
Where do you get these amazing lyrics from, Yoda? Are they yours?
All of Elton John's records Yoda has.
Really?
Mmm.
So, what do you like about Elton John? That's not your official question for the week. I'm just curious.
Piano.
Rocket Man?
Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. Samson. What are the lyrics to Rocket Man, Yoda? Nobody actually seems to know.
A great secret, that is.
I just thought of that commercial where a bunch of people are singing Rocket Man and nobody is singing the correct lyrics.
Not the kind of place to raise your kids, Mars is. Cold as hell, in fact, it is.
We just lost a rover on Mars, too, that lasted 15 whole years when he wasn't supposed to last that long.
Aw, can't get your rover out.
All right, Yoda.
A question you have for Yoda?
I do, and I'll return to fan questions next week, but since we were doing two this weekend, I wanted to kind of bank some of our fan questions away. So, last week, I asked you what it was like when you were a Padawan. My question for you this week is about your master. Were they a good or bad master to you?
Good master. Pretty good master. Old Four Eyes. Nakata del Gormo.
Was his name Frank Oz?
Half snake, half worm he was.
Oh, that would have been really good for your tiny little tadpole Padawan self from last week.
Yoda looked up to him as tadpole.
You probably looked up to him when you were an adult.
Taught Yoda how to unhinge Yoda's jaw and eat food whole. And catch fish.
I was really hoping to set you up to be like, yeah, my master's name was Frank Oz.
Who? Yoda knows Frank Oz. Frank Oz put his hand in Yoda.
Okay, well, thanks, Yoda.
Not pretty.
Well, I will see you next week.
Okay.
Enjoy hopping off of Frank Oz's hand.
That memory was something Yoda did not want to remember. There was Pig Lady there, too.
Alright, we'll see you next time, Yoda.
Looked like Pink Gamorrean Guard.
Oh, don't say mean things about Miss Piggy.
Wow, I've never seen Yoda get so quiet.
I know.
Yeah, we went in deep on Yoda this time.
But don't you?
Guess we know better than to mention Frank Oz.
Yeah. Well, you ready for act one?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Are you not ready for act one?
Up on me by surprise.
All right, act one?
Act one.
To give you a recap of the last couple weeks, fucking Tarkin, aka Farkin, came to Lothal and stirred up some shit, like killing some bad Imperials and berating everyone at their job. He sets up a trap and manages to capture Kanan. Well, Hera and the space kids are all sad, and Hera gets orders from Fulcrum to leave Kanan behind, and the kids are like, Teenage Rebellion! Except for Zeb, who is like, Adult Rebellion! And they all go to the Crime Lord Visago, who they make a deal with. He gives them a way to find Kanan, while Ezra reveals to Visago that he and Kanan are Jedis. Now, they got an IOU with a baddie. Needless to say that Hera is pissed off, but she gets on board with Ezra's plan. With some sneaky chopper spy, they discover that Kanan is heading to Mustafar, where Jedi go to die. Cue the dramatic music. Ba-ba-bum. On to this week. We start with Sabine infiltrating the Imperial airbase where she vandalized in her Rebel Short art attack, and keeps the stormtroopers following her. During this, Ezra and Zeb successfully steal a transport and pick up Sabine on the way out as she taunts them. They finish with all of Sabine's minds ticking away, and the stormtroopers are like, not again, she's gonna explode us! And all the TIE fighters explode. They meet up with the Ghost, and Hera briefs them. They will use the transport to get close to Tarkin's ship, which is above Mustafar in orbit. But they're going to need a distraction to get in, since the transport they stole is just too big to fit in the tiny hangar bay. And Ezra is like, well, we may have a... And Zeb's like, no, don't speak of it. And Ezra's like, it's for space, Dad, Zeb. Look, remember the episode Fight or Flight when Zeb and I took a joyride in a TIE fighter and he told us to crash it? Yeah, we kept the TIE fighters instead. And Hera's like, in any other circumstances, I would be so mad at you two. But this is cool, and you two are brilliant, so it's fine this time, but not next time. But there's a problem. Sabine and Ezra have been painting the TIE fighter all season long, and it looks like a bag of Skittles vomited all over it with some checkerboard patterns thrown in. And Zeb says that this plan is crazy. Well, Space Mom pulls out her soapbox, she plops it on the ground, and she gets up on her soapbox and go, look, we've all lost a lot of family to the Empire, and Kanan is family. And this plan is insane, but it's what we got. So I'm not going to order any of you guys to come. You don't have to come, but I want you here because you want to be here. Who's in? And they all join into the crazy plan. It's time to save Kanan, who is currently being brutally tortured by the Grand Inquisitor, a.k.a. Mr. Grande. Grande wants to know more about the bigger rebellion in Fulcrum.
Enjoy but Kanan him while doesn't... you can, Hope. Enjoy him while you can.
don't. but Kanan doesn't know anything about a bigger rebellion, so Grande switches out his tactics and asks how Kanan survived Order 66. Grande pulls out all the mental torture, pulling at Kanan's PTSD of that moment when his master died. And then he gets in Kanan's bubble space, and I squealed a little bit too, because I'd want him that close to me whispering in my ear, boy. And Kanan admits that Depa Bialba's last words were, "Run." And Grande calls him a coward and wonders what the rebels would think about him. And Grande says that Kanan should be afraid because he couldn't save Depa then and he can't save his friends now. What'd you think of Act 1?
It was good. I'm looking at my notes and I'm noticing they're all visual notes. That's me, Mr. Visual.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm the visual guy.
I'm the visual guy here at Jaga's Jedi. Just here to check it out, the pictures in the TV show.
I love the shot of the ghost coming up through the smoke and, like, pretty much making a rebel symbol.
I had that note, too. Smoke.
That was really cool. The lightsaber in this, they put in the Kanan, they stick it in Kanan's face, if I recall this right.
Yeah.
But you see a close, what a pointy lightsaber. I've never seen a lightsaber that pointy.
Yeah.
It was like a needle. That was pretty cool.
I used to have a problem with how thin the lightsabers were because I got so used to how big they looked in Clone Wars that when I got to Rebels, it was like weird in my brain. And then when I went back and rewatched the old original trilogy, they're actually really thin, tiny things.
Yeah, and they're even thinner in the Ralph McQuarrie art. So it's just sort of, and it was Grande's, so he could have like fine-tuned it to look like that, you know, just because he wanted it to look more. You know, but that would be good to have a lightsaber like that because you could do some really fine-tuned stuff, like with Yoda. If flashback to last episode, like Yoda's little toothpick. Lightsaber when he was a little paddling Padawan. And my only other note is, and I think I mentioned this last week or yesterday when we were talking to you and I hope, just that beautiful shot of the Star Destroyers up over the red, you know, deep Satan red Mustafar.
Yeah.
It's like a painted cover to a sci-fi novel. It's beautiful. Beautiful. That's all I got for part one.
Well, for me, I actually like that they made a shout out to Sabine short because they released those four shorts prior to the short show. And so, because it would have been really easy to, like, write off those shorts, like, they weren't part of, like, the main canon, but they actually gave a nod to it, because the stormtroopers were like, oh my god, it's the artist! And that's the airbase that they were in during Art Attack.
Yeah, it was almost, I remember the first time I watched it, I remember sort of thinking, oh, maybe the short was just, like, they took the scene out of this episode for that short, but then, you know, they're like, oh, it's her again, you know? Yeah. Or she said something about, hey, guys, you know, remember me? So, that was cool.
Also, during that scene when they steal the transport, I suddenly realized that at some point in the season, Hera must have taught Ezra how to fly at some point. Because I remember really early in the season, he was like, oh, when do I get to learn how to fly? And she's like, oh, yeah, I'll take care of that. So at some point, he must have learned how to fly at some point in the season. Because he certainly didn't know how to fly earlier.
Nope.
So, just a note, the Kanan the Last Padawan comic started running about a month after this episode aired. So, this was actually the first time we got to know anything about how Kanan survived Order 66. So, I thought that was a cool thing, because I couldn't remember which of these came first. So, this was actually the first time we learned something about it.
I actually should reread those. This would be a perfect time for me to do a reread on those, because those were great comics.
I really need to reread them, too. I have all the issues. I'm looking at my comic box that has all 12 of them in there.
Yeah, no, I got them all, too. I was grimly disappointed because I wasn't paid. You know, you worked at a comic shop, and so everybody else in comics world, too, is way more informed than me, and that's because I don't inform myself, so... When it ended, I was just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I thought this was just going to be an, and I was like, this is like, shaping up to be, you know, amongst the best of the Star Wars, early Star Wars comics, of, you know, of the new Marvel ones.
It still is. It was my favorite new Marvel Star Wars comic until Charles Soule's run of Vader.
I was really enjoying the original Vader run, too. I only have the first issue of the second run of Vader. I have to get to the comic shop and grab a few.
I liked the first run of Vader until about... I liked the first two volumes of it. I wasn't a fan of volume 3 and 4. But I kind of feel that way with the run of the current Marvel Star Wars, too. I liked the first two runs, and I love Jason Aaron, but his run kind of lulled a lot. But when Karen Gillan took over, it really picked back up again. But yeah, the last two volumes of the first run of Vader, I was just kind of slow to me. I didn't really care about Queen Trios until she became Leia's foil in the Star Wars comics. She's like the anti-Leia in the Star Wars comics, so... I need to go back and give those a reread.
Yeah, I only read the first couple episodes of Star Wars and then was going to let them pile up and do just a mat, because they're so fast to read. And so I've got like the first 12 issues of Star Wars. You know, and that's when I sort of stopped off on buying them. But I'm going to, you know, slowly hack away at most of them.
Yeah.
Buy all of the Darth Vader series.
Yeah, I think the reason I loved the first two volumes of Vader was because how it tied in with the Star Wars one. So, like, you saw, like, Boba Fett leave the Vader comic, show up in the Star Wars comic, and then come back to the Vader comic.
Right, right.
They ran parallel to each other, so I think that's why I liked it so much. But after the first two volumes, they kind of split and went off their own ways. Though, I do appreciate them introducing Dr. Aphra, though, because she's just fun. But, yeah, I really need to reread Kanan the Last Padawan. But actually, fun thing, though, I actually started reading Kanan the Last Padawan before I started watching Rebels.
I did, too. I didn't. No, that's right. You were late coming to it. You didn't even start coming into it till around here.
Yeah, like, call to action. Here's my timeline, my Rebels started timeline. I first saw a little bit of call to action while waiting for Gravity Falls to come on. And then I was like, that was a thing. And then I'll talk about it later in my notes too, but my Twitter exploded that Ahsoka Tano came back, which was this episode. And I was like, what do you mean Ahsoka's back? And then I hadn't got a chance to start it. And then Kanan Last Padawan came out. And I was like, oh, well, here's this Kanan thing from that Rebels thing. So I read the first couple of episodes because I'm a slut for anything Clone Wars. And I was like, oh my God, it's Clone Wars. And so I'm being a slut for Clone Wars. I read about the first issue or two of Kanan, and then I started watching Rebels over that summer before season 2 came out. So that was my hopes intro to Rebels in that order.
Well, it's funny. I just read, I didn't read, but I just found my old Clone Wars comic that they based the, remember the Slaver arc?
Yeah.
And I knew I had it somewhere, and I thought I had it in like issues, like I bought it as issues, but I don't. I have it in a digest size Clone Wars comic. And it's drawn in the Tartakovsky Tartakovsky style of Clone Wars rather than that. But it has a lot of the same story in it. And I was just like, there it is.
Speaking of comics, Chris, I just got you a present.
Ooh.
It's nothing fancy. They've been running the Age of Republic comics, and they're all these little one-shots, so I picked up an extra one of the Grievous for you.
I always want the Grievous.
So I just need to mail it to you. I just haven't had a chance to get to the post office and mail it to you. So that will be coming to you sometime soon, as soon as I can get over to the post office.
Excellent.
Yeah. But my next note is, Boyfriend Grande is really pulling at Kanan's PTSD.
Yeah, for sure. I'm surprised Kanan answers him, but then again, it doesn't really, like, it's not, like, really a breaking point for Kanan. You can tell he's just like, yeah, I could tell him this, and, you know, and it doesn't cut either way.
Yeah.
It was an interestingly done scene. It was pretty neat. That whole scene was really good because it was an illustration of what Herod said earlier about Kanan not knowing anything.
Yeah. And my kind of follow-up note with that is, I mean, honestly, Clone Wars and Rebels does such a great job showcasing how PTSD actually works, and they always address it really well in the series.
I'm glad they do. Well, I think they have to, because in the movies you can't do it as much.
Yeah.
But if you're doing an ongoing series about war, you really should address that as a reality of it.
Yeah. I think it was the second battle of Geonosis with Varys and Ahsoka. I think it was the one where they were on the transport with the worms infecting the clones. But there's that scene where Ahsoka was just like, Varys, I can't sleep. Like, I don't sleep. Like, silence is really loud and uncomfortable to me. And, like, that was probably, like, one of the best cases of them showcasing what PTSD actually does to people. And here, this is another case here. So it's something that they do in the Filoniverse. And, you know, after how Resistance ended, I hope we get some of that for Kaz.
Yeah. And the probably the girl who's the pirate character, too, probably has some trauma in her
Sinara.
Past. Sinara probably has some trauma in her past, too.
Sinara, I love her, and I ship her so hard with Tam, but that's gonna be difficult going forward, yeah. I do, I ship Tam and Sinara so hard, they just need a kiss. And my last note for Act 1 is, this is like an aesthetic note, a visual note, too. So there's a scene where Grande is whispering in Kanan's ear. So it's a really close-up shot of Grande's face. And I notice they do a really good job rendering his tattoos, like his red tattoos. Because a lot of times in animation, it's easy to make tattoos look really bright and fresh. Like it's fresh ink and it's sitting right on top of the skin. But here, the tattoo actually looks like it's been faded from over time. Because, like, if you look at a normal person's tattoo that they've had for a while, you can tell there's, like, layers of skin on top of it.
Right,
and
right.
And they're
it
not bright
that,
and fresh.
It does have that bright, fresh colors, you know, that it originally does. It has, it's almost like a comic book or something, you know. It's got that.
That matte look.
Yeah, because it's underneath your skin. And, yeah, I remember noticing that the first time that I watched this, that it was just like, wow, they are really they're really getting, you know, and I consider like this on the upper end of CGI quality for TV, mm-hmm. but it's on the lower end for say a movie. It's, you know, that gray area in between, and you know, to the where they're getting to the point of where they can do that much detail of a tattoo to make it look that much more like a real tattoo is getting pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's fun. We're sort of like watching this whole Filoniverse. We're watching a nice evolution of CGI over, you know, over almost a decade now.
That's true, because early Clone Wars, like, one of our common things that we always said is that everybody always looks so boxy and almost like they're models, but when you get to later seasons, you can tell, like, every season, the technology got a little bit better.
A little better, and a little better, and a little better, and it's, you know, it's been over 10 years now.
Yeah.
So that stuff's been developing, so it's fun, and then you have Resistance now, which is a different take on it, you know, it's a different, you know, different aesthetic to it, but it's still using probably a lot of the same ideas.
And you can even tell just from the beginning of like season one, or like the first episode of Resistance to the second one, like there's already a lot of improvements in the animation too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, I was thinking back to like how boxy I thought Poe's face kind of looked in episode one. And then I was looking here in the finale just aired yesterday for us. So time, like just giving a timeline of this episode when we're recording. But everyone is so expressive in the finale. So just from episode one to whatever number episode the finale was, they've already improved a lot in that animation too.
I was complaining about their faces in the first few episodes, and it's gotten better and better and better. And I've gotten more used to it too. You get used to the look of it, and it, you just flow with it, and it starts looking normal.
That's kind of how I feel about this. Like, I remember in the beginning of Rebels, I it took me a while to get used to the animation. And every once
and
in a while,
Clone
there
Wars.
Are still things like Yoda that still, And Thrawn. I love Thrawn. He's one of my favorite characters.
And the same with Clone Wars. There's stuff in Clone Wars that's a little bit weird in places, too. But
yeah, like, I don't like Thrawn's rebel design at all. I think I don't. It's a little bit too stylized. His face looks like an eggplant. or a really thick dildo.
Or a dildo eggplant.
Yeah, it's just like a really short, like if you just get the part that's around his eyes, like the bone muscles down to his eyes, to his cheekbone, down to his cheek, it looks like a really thick chode.
Ironically, they do make egg dildos.
Ew.
Well, they're not made out of real eggs. They're just shaped like an egg.
But that's all I have for Act 1. Do you have anything else?
Nope, that's all I got.
All right, so Act 2?
Act 2.
Hera in the...
Whoa!
I hit that Hera a little too hard. Hera
ball in your throat.
Hera and the space kids arrive at Mustafar, and Ezra reaches out with the Force. Him and Kanan connect for a moment. Knowing that Space Dad is alive, Hera sends in their codes to Tarkin Star Destroyer, which get approved. And they send in their painted TIE fighters, and the stormtroopers are like, "Oh, that's a nice looking paint job." And it sends out an electric pulse that takes out the power on Tarkin's ship. And Grande's like, "Ooh, goody! Your friends are here! Yay!" And Ezra cuts a hole in the side of Farkin's ship, and the crew sneaks on while they leave Chopper behind to ready their escape. All the stormtroopers in the area have been knocked out from the ion bolts. Well, Farkin is pissed off that his ship is under attack by some pesky rebels, and he calls for reinforcements, since a lot of his troopers are knocked out. But the reinforcements find the rebels really fast, so they decide to split up. Ezra goes to find Kanan, and Hera, Zeb, and Sabine are off doing something? It's not really clear what the three of them are doing, so I just assume that they're keeping the bad guys distracted. That's the only thing I can guess. I have no idea what Hera, Zeb, and Sabine are actually running around doing this episode. Meanwhile, Chopper is like, "That's a lot of ships and troopers coming for us. Even my badass murderbot self can't take on all of these guys." So he makes a call to Fulcrum. Ezra makes it to the detention area and frees Kanan from his hold. They make it to the ship's reactor room. And there's my Grande, standing in the dramatic light because he's always at a fucking 11 in this show. Okay, brace yourself, Hope. Brace yourself, Hope. It's the beginning of the end. It's coming. And it's time for their final showdown as Grande lights his saber. And Kanan borrows Ezra since Grande has his saber at the moment. And they fight! And Kanan takes everything he's learned from these little fights all season and uses it against Grande, even implementing Ezra's staple gun shooting thingy. And they're fighting, and they're tumbling, and they're matching each other's moves, and it's freaking awesome! And Ezra sees Kanan's lightsaber on Grande's belt and uses the Force to take it. And it's Master and Padawan versus the Inquisitor. And Grande is just having a grande old time! I had to use that joke one more time! And he pushes both in the back, and he throws his double saber at Ezra. And when the kid tries to deflect it, it knocks him off the walkway, supposedly to his demise. Chris, I got a question for you before I continue on with this reading. Have you seen The Whitest Kid You Know in the skit with Abraham Lincoln and John Wilkes Booth?
I have not.
So there is a point in this thing, because the whole thing is Lincoln's so annoying that John Wilkes Booth shoots him. And there's a point in this skit where Lincoln's just going, "Now you fucked up! Now you fucked up! Now you fucked up! You done fucked up now!" Well, this is Kanan's "Now you fucked up!" moment.
Oh, yeah.
Because he takes a deep breath, gathers himself, and uses the Force to get his lightsabers. All of them. Two of them? all two of them. And Grande is just smiling at all of this like
that's,
a psychopath.
That's called both, Hope, both.
Shut up. And Grande is just smiling like a psychopath at all of this. Kanan has nothing else to fear now, and he can take Grande head on. Hera, Sabine, and Zeb are running out of options getting back to Chopper, and they decide to change their plans and find another exit at the hangar bay with Sabine's TIE fighter. And Hera calls into Ezra, but there's no answer, because the blueberry is out cold, and they're teasing that he could be dead, but we know that's not the case, because he's the protagonist, so you know he's not dead. into back two. So, you know the point where Grande's just smiling at Kanan? Uh-huh. And it looks so creepy. I texted that picture to Megan, and I was like, it's picture day at the Jedi Temple.
It's selfie day.
It's picture day at the Sith school.
Look who's employee of the month at the library.
It does. It just looks like an awkward photo. Someone's like, smile for this random picture. And he's just like, to read Megan's actual response to that, she wrote me back. What did she write? Ugh, that's horrifying.
Well, that's pretty much where it's supposed to be. I like that when sort of underline you now you fucked up. I like that when, you know, through most of this first season, you know, Kanan's just like, Ezra, stay back, or, you know, or whatever. In this one, you know, Ezra's just busted him out from Imperial jail and stuff. And when it's time to fight Grande, you know, he's just like, gives him the nod, and it's just like, okay, you know, there's no messing around. And of course, to Kanan, he, as soon as he does that, Ezra immediately gets killed.
Yeah. I also like in that scene that they're using each other's lightsabers, because in that moment, yeah, Kanan has Ezra's and Ezra has Kanan's.
Yeah, and they just go with it. And I like that. It's very much like the episode one lightsaber fight, but it's got a little bit of Force Awakens in it too, and Grande's just sort of waiting there, sort of like Kylo Ren with Han Solo. Mm-hmm. And which brings me back to what I was talking about last week. And here it's fully turned, and now the music is very prequel like in this, especially in this part here. You know, we're getting
as long as it's not Duel of the Fates, it's fine.
It's not Duel of the Fates, but there's little hints towards it. Like there's vocal, you know, chorusy vocal stuff accompanying Grande, similarly to Darth Maul. And there's from episode two, there, when they were getting chased through Coruscant at the beginning, there was a very slashy sort of almost psycho like strings, like a view 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 strings, and they're using that a little bit more. And it's interesting because music wise it's heavily relied on the original trilogy, especially Star Wars and Empire more than Jedi, mostly because Jedi recycled a lot of stuff from Star Wars and Empire too. So but yeah, I just found that interesting. I found that like towards the end of season one, they're going more towards some prequel music, and it makes sense by the third part. So yeah, it's neat. I like it.
I think it's also kind of fitting because they're also above Mustafar, which is a very prequel planet.
Right. Things have turned very prequel-y and they've been very original trilogy, like up until now. And now it takes a change from being just sort of like an establishment of these guys as sort of very, very much like characters from Star Wars, you know, sort of like combinations of Han and Luke and Leia and Chewbacca and R2 and 3PO, you know, Chopper's sort of R2 and 3PO mixed together because he's, you know, sort of cussing people out and stuff, or well, not that 3PO did, but he's chatty. And now it's like sort of going, all right, now we're going into the wider universe, which is the prequels, while all the while they are also doing little previews of the new movies coming out. It's very well done. They're not really doing much musical stuff from the new movies, but you get a little reference here and there. So and at the same time, it's tying in with the Filoni-ness of Clone Wars too.
Yeah.
So I like it. This is a big turning point in the story, going from episodic, here's our characters, to now here's where our characters are going.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
For me, I actually love that moment when the stormtrooper is like, I really like the look of that TIE fighter.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
But it kind of stood out to me a little bit because even though it's played for comedy, I like when we get those little one-liners from the stormtroopers, because when it was the battle droids in Clone Wars, it was straight up for comedy. But yeah. Here it's a little bit different because it gives them like a little bit of hints of individuality under the mask because they are people.
It's humanizing.
Like, yeah, and like, I mean, they're all fucking Nazis, so they shouldn't be humanized too much. But it sets them apart from, like, each other, you know? Like, that one guy was like, that's not regulation. And the other guy was like, I kind of like it.
Well, that's the thing is, but even if Nazis are, there's dumb Nazis, smarter Nazis, there's lazy Nazis, there's Nazi, you know, there's bumbling, good-natured Nazis or whatever. They're still humans and... For whatever reason that they're in that uniform, some of them may be, you know, blissfully unaware of how evil the Empire is, and they're just like, I joined the army, you know?
Yeah.
So I always like that. I always like that, and I'm happily surprised that on second viewing there's more stormtroopers getting killed than I remember.
Yeah. Just wait to the finale of Resistance, man.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, Resistance has just illustrated that it's not going to be afraid to kill some stormtroopers in it.
Yeah, that was...
So that's that was fucking brutal. Well, it's Star Wars, so I guess you're going to have to kill a few... You can't make Star Wars without killing a few stormtroopers.
Yeah. I remember you I can't remember if it was during the Clone Wars run that we covered or early this season that we covered, but I remember at some point you were saying that when they cut through doors and it's glowing metal, it should be hot and they shouldn't be able to, like, they should be like melting shoes or something, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I remember you saying that somewhere in the 164
episodes. If it's
episodes
glowing and molten, it's hot. Yes.
Yeah. I remember you saying that somewhere in our 164 episodes. Well, after when they're cutting their way into Tarkin's ship, And Ezra cuts a hole through the wall, you see him, like, touch the metal, and he pulls his hand back, and he shakes it out. And I'm like, yeah, it should be way hotter than that. It should have hurt him more than that. But at least they acknowledge it's hot.
Yeah, like literally, like, something that hot that it's red hot and molten like that, like, your clothing will catch fire just getting near it.
Yeah.
Like, it would singe your, like, you would be able to see people jumping through that hole. And, like, smoking a little bit and singeing their beards off and stuff.
Yeah.
If they had beards.
But I did notice that, like, Ezra touched it and then pulled his hand back and shook out his hand. So I was like, at least they acknowledge it's hot for Chris. Uh-huh. All right. So my next notice, even though he's about to kill my evil boyfriend, I am so proud to see how much Kanan has grown just through season one, fighting-wise. His very first fight with Grande in Rise of the Old Masters, he was floundering in that fight. And they are just so lucky they even got out of that alive. And here, he's completely holding his own. And it's just, every time they fought, he took a little bit more of, like, each battle, and he learned a little bit more about it. And we saw it two episodes ago. Grande even says, oh, you've been practicing. And it's so cool to see from where he was in Rise of the Old Masters to hear how much Kanan has grown.
And character-wise, he's had his space family since the beginning of the show, but now he's got a, you know, a Padawan who he imagines as the last hope of all Jedi, and, you know, a newfound personal grudge towards Grande.
Yeah.
It's become, like, super personal now. So, yeah.
And it's how he fights, too. Like, I love when he switches between Ezra's blaster and, like, then switching it to a saber. And he does that a few times in the fight. It's really cool, especially for someone like Kanan, who's known to be the gunslinging Jedi because he uses a blaster. And so that's very fitting for him to be able to be like, blaster sword, blaster sword.
And I like how Ezra's like, ooh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, and it's really cool. My follow-up note is that this is one of the best fights of the show. This is a really, really good fight. The whole thing is just awesome from beginning to end. And my last note is in big letters, Kanan Unleashed. Beast Mode Kanan. So, that's all I have for Act 2.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so, Act 3?
I'm ready for it. Are you ready for it?
No. I'm not. I'm not. Okay, but we're going to do it anyway. If we never do anything ever again and never record another podcast.
Holy shit, I see all the all caps in there. Yep, okay. I see what's going
on. Grande will live forever. You know, thanks for listening to Jagos and Jedi. Our podcast ends now, so Grande never has to die. Okay,
just remember, audience, it's all caps coming. All caps alert.
I need to take a drink. I'm about to yell.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
You're about to go Alex Jones on this show.
Oh, no, never. Oh, what? No. I'm now...
False flag attack on the Grand Inquisitor.
No. I might actually just whisper the whole thing to give you a terrible ASMR because I know you hate that.
Oh, jeez.
Ezra is out cold.
I'll just edit it with earplugs in. We'll see how it comes out.
And he's hearing voices of his parents and his new family. And he snaps awake. Okay, Act 3?
Act 3.
Don't you ever fucking call me Alex Jones again. I will disown you.
I will disown you. How many times you get called Alex Jones?
I will disown you so fast and hard, Honeywell. You don't even know. All right, Act 3. Ezra is out cold and hearing voices of his parents and his new family. And he snaps awake, now having new scratch on his cheek. And he calls into Hera, and Hera's like, "Do you have my space husband?" And Ezra's like, "Hera, you would be so hot for him right now because he's in beast mode. Ew, I can't believe I just said that to my space mom. Gross." And Kanan is holding his own against Grande, who for the first time in the series doesn't look too sure of himself. And Kanan's like, "Yeah, I was a coward, but I let my fear rule me until the book of New Dawn, and then I met Hera and my space family now, and I love them. Fuck Jedi attachments. I love them, and I will fight for them, and you can't beat me. I also believe in the Force, because everything that Hope wrote, that was all Hope. And all that stuff before about loving my space family, that was just Hope just saying that I love my space family. But what I actually say in canon in the episode is I believe in the Force, which led me to my space family that Hope is adding in right here. And she's apparently talking about herself third person, so what the fuck ever." And he snaps Grande's lightsabers. And he knocks Grande off the walkway. And barely holding on to the side. Okay, Hope, and here it is. Brace yourself. It's happening. Grande's lightsabers fall into the reactor, and then Kanan picks them up, and they live happily ever after. They live happily ever
that's
after.
Not how it happened at all.
I know.
That's not how it happened.
I know. Grande's lightsabers fall. Grande's lightsabers fall into the reactor, causing it to set fire and slowly blow up. And Grande is looking at him. And since Vader is mean and probably does evil things, Grande chooses to die than face Vader, and he lets go, and he falls into the fire, and he dies! Don't touch me, Chris! I don't want to be comforted right now! The pain is real! Go!
I'm in New York State, Hope. I can't touch you.
Oh, don't comfort me right now. I don't want it.
I'm not trying to comfort you at all, Hope. Not at all. It's okay. No. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
But at least Grande is with the Force now, and Vader can't hurt him anymore.
He's in a better place, Hope.
I know.
He would have wanted it this way.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. He probably wanted to eventually be the Sith Lord himself, but he would have been a good Sith Lord.
Tough titty for Grande.
Anyway. And Kanan looks a little sad that it happened, but it all vanishes when he hears Ezra behind him. Happy to see each other, Master and Padawan run out of the fire hell exploding around them. Meanwhile, Farkin is like, "Damn it! My ship is blowing up. Time to pull a Grievous and hop on out of here." Hera, Sabine, and Zeb get to their pretty painted TIE fighter, while Kanan and Ezra call in that they'll find a way off the ship. And Hera flies the TIE out of there, but they're being followed by other enemy ships. and she tries to call Chopper, but there's no answer. Kanan and Ezra spot Grande's TIE fighter, and Ezra's like, he's not going to be using that anymore. And Kanan's like, dude, why are you rubbing salt in Hope's wounds right now? That's so mean. And they swipe the TIE and fly out of there and shoot some baddies off of Hera's tail. The space family is together again, but without Chopper, there's nowhere to go. But then Chopper arrives, and he's not alone. Several ships come out of hyperspace and defend our heroes until they can dock with Chopper's transport. All safe and secure, they all jump into hyperspace. Meanwhile, Farkin blew up and died a terrible, horrible death on his ship. Just kidding! He's a fucking cockroach, and he's gonna live to see another day. Fuck you, Farkin! On the transport, Hera and Kanan see each other, and Hera calls him dear? And they hug? And I love them so much together! But with Chopper appearing and saying hi, they realize that someone else was flying the ghost in that battle. They attach with the ghost, and there's a rebel soldier there to greet them. And Chopper projects a message from Padme's baby daddy, Bail Organa, who greets them. And Hera introduces them all, since she knew that they were all members of other rebel cells. And then, out of the ashes of Season 5 of Clone Wars, comes my favorite Star Wars character of all time. Ahsoka, yes, Queen Tano! And I freaked out. And she introduces herself and reveals that she was Fulcrum the entire time. She's there because Ezra's message 2 episodes ago gave everyone hope. She says they don't know what the future holds, but there's a new chapter for all of them. Meanwhile, back on Lothal, Alexander Kallus greets Farkin and say that they're getting reports of uprising all over Lothal. But Farkin isn't worried. He's brought a friend with him to help out. And out of the shuttle comes the one, the only, Darth Vader! The end.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum, Darth Vader!
You know those that horn sound? Those
Darth Vader!
What I want you to do, do you know that meme with the horn? Just the brr, 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 brr. It's like an air horn sound.
Like the Vuvuzulu or whatever they are, Vuvuzela.
No, it's like a beep. Oh, let's see. Now you're going to make me look it up.
Like an air horn? Just sort of like a...
No. No. Ah, oh, here it is. Let's see if I can play it for you. You can edit all this.
Oh, yeah.
That's the sound. So when I go da-da-da-da Darth Vader, I want you to play that sound. Just that. Okay. Bah, 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 bah. Please and thank you. So what do you think?
What's that sound called?
Oh gosh. I looked up air horn meme, and it was the first thing that came up.
Okay.
So, actually, somebody redid Duel of the Fates with that air horn. So it's just like, bam, 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 bam. It's hilarious. Go look it up. Anyway, what do you think of Act 3?
I liked Act 3 a lot.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like some sort of, maybe it was just with you, but I thought there was some sort of fan controversy over whether we were going to see Kanan and Hera kiss.
I remember there was a little kerfluffle in Season 4 when she admitted her feelings for Kanan because she had been drugged. And so there was a whole thing about how that was handled because Herrick wasn't quite in her own wits. So it was like a weird thing because she was drugged. But outside of that, my thing is I just don't believe that they're not a couple until Season 4. I think it's bullshit. Because they clearly love each other. She calls him dear. She calls him love.
Yeah, no, they're acting like people who are a couple, for sure.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, in Season 4, she's just like, Kanan, I love you. And he's like, really, you do? And I'm like, you guys have been fucking married this entire goddamn time. Like, they're clearly together now. So that's a me thing. I think that's bullshit in Season 4 because look at this episode. She calls him dear.
So,
and they're hugging, and they're her arms around him, and, like, her hands on his chest. They're clearly a fucking couple. Go on.
Well, my first note is, bye, Grande. Bye.
Bye.
The space battle in this is great.
It's just
shot well. It's beautiful over Mustafar. I love saying Mustafar. It's like mustache. It's just visually very well done. And it reminds me a little bit of episode one. And there's a lot of little spinniness to it that reminds me of episode one. I totally forgot that both Ahsoka and Vader showed up at the end of
this
season.
I forgot about Vader until I was doing the extra information notes. And I was like, what the fuck, Vader? And then I was like, oh, yeah, Vader does come in this episode. Mm-hmm. I forgot about Vader. Ahsoka, I remembered.
And then when I saw it, I'm like, all of a sudden, I remembered watching it and being very sketchy about it. I was very sketchy about it. I was just like, well, you know, it seems like that, you know, maybe they're not happy with how it seemed almost like they were pulling out, you know, we'll pull out these, you know, Darth Vader's always a fan favorite, and Ahsoka is just like brings the whole Clone Wars.
Are you talking about the first time you watched these episodes?
Yeah, the first time I watched it. This time I'm psyched because I know where it's going, you know?
Yeah.
But when I didn't know where it was going, I was really sketchy about it. I was just like, okay, this could be really fan wankery, you know, going forward. I don't know if they're gonna just all of a sudden really start to throw, because they still, you know, they threw in R2-D2 and C-3PO and Lando and stuff like that, but Darth Vader actually showed up at the very beginning, so it's actually, that's nice. So now he's like bookends.
But not actually, when they first aired the episode, that scene with Vader wasn't in it. That was on a re-airing on ABC that they added that deleted scene.
I like it, though, that whether they meant it to or not, that if you choose to have that be the official one, that it's that he sort of bookends it without really doing much other than just showing up, you know, just like, but I know where it goes with Vader. So like now it's just like, oh yeah, yes.
Yeah.
You know, here they are. So yeah, that was the big difference. I was really doubtful. I was just like, okay, it seems like they're throwing a little too much. All of a sudden it's been these sort of light adventures and now we've got this and this, and how are they going to tie this all together? And, yeah, it turned out to be okay. But that's all I really got for Act 3.
For me, my first note's not written here. So I just want to say this before I forget it. So after I watched this episode, I ended up talking to Megan a little bit, and we were talking about Grande's death. And I probably have a note similar to this, because if you look at this, I have about a half a page of just Grande death notes.
Grande death. That sounds like a goth band.
Grande death notes. It's a mix of Star Wars and the anime Death Note.
yeah.
Anime fans get that. So grab your pen and write in your Death Note and Grande dies. Oh, God. Anyway, someone is laughing at that.
I've seen several Death Note, Death Note journals at garage sales.
Yeah, that's a series I need to finish. I've started the manga multiple times and I've started the anime multiple times, but I never actually finished it. That's one I need to actually sit down and finish. That and Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop is one of those shows that I've seen almost the entire thing, but I've never finished it. And that's a fucking shame because Cowboy Bebop is so damn good.
Well, it's going to be a live action movie pretty soon too, right? So you got to get caught up to.
Yeah. So I'm so excited because they're also bringing back Fruits Baskets and they're redoing the show and they're actually going to do the entire series and I can't fucking wait. Anyway, so after I finished those show notes for those, I called Megan. And me and Megan were actually talking about Grande's death. And she made a very valiant point. And she was like, and she said, it's very interesting watching Grande in this fight. And because that when Kanan starts getting the upper hand and getting more confidence, you can tell that Grande is losing his confidence. And she says that when it comes to the Inquisitors, they don't actually truly have power. They are given power because they just happen to be Force users and they're giving flashy lightsabers. And they are there to intimidate people. But when people are not scared or intimidated by them, they don't know what to do anymore because they don't really have power. And I thought that was a very interesting point that she made.
Yeah, that's why he was just like, there are some things that are worse than death. So.
But yeah, like, she was like, it's so sad because they really don't have any motivation other than being scary. And when they're not scary, they're nothing.
They're bullies.
I was like, huh?
They're bullies.
Yeah, that's really all they are. And when you bully the bully, they crumple.
Yeah.
And they're you see bullies. It in this fight.
I mean, Vader and Palpatine are bullies too, but that's not all they are, you know.
No, Anakin Skywalker is a trash bag that deserves everything he gets, but I still love him. He's a scary trash bag, but Anakin Skywalker is a trash bag. He's the scariest trash bag you'll ever see.
Glad bag Skywalker.
That's where all his fries for Padme went. Oh man, I just brought back him feeding fries to Padme from our Clone Wars days. Eat your fries, Padme! Eat your fries!
You gonna eat those?
Eat them, Padme, gosh!
I eat them, but they make me break out.
Gosh, Padme, eat your fries! Anyway, by the way, so, speaking of Padme, I started reading
Three
Eat
now.
Shadow. Huh?
You're eating for three now.
Four. Thank you. Oh, no, three. Thank you. Hope doesn't know how to count. But speaking of Padme, total side note, I started reading Queen Shadow, which is the new Padme book that came out. It's so good because it's about Padme's transformation from queen into senator and that time period of her life. And it's a Padme story with no Anakin, pretty much. Like, there's talks about Anakin because, like, one of the things Padme... Because before she becomes a senator... And she's stepping down as queen. She's about to become a private citizen. So she actually talks to Sabe and she's like, you know, I'd really like to go back to Tatooine and see if I can help that kid from 10 years ago. But then she becomes a senator. So Sabe goes to Tatooine to look into it and to see if she can find Shmi Skywalker. But pretty much, it's so interesting. It's a Padme story with pretty much no Anakin in it. And it's amazing because on one hand, there's a lot of great Clone Wars stuff. Like her old boyfriend Clovis shows up and he's just like, hey, you're really pretty. You want to be my friend? And she's just like, ugh. It's so funny. And actually her and Bail Organa don't like each other in the beginning. Like they don't trust each other. So that's an interesting dynamic. But really what the story is really about is her and her handmaidens. Like the entire first part is talking about how they weaponized her appearance. Like, the entire first part takes place during the invasion of Naboo when they're putting makeup on Sabe, and it's explaining why each point is important because it's just weaponizing their femininity, and it's brilliant because they're talking about how the reason the headdresses are so big because it takes away from the face because people look at the headdress first, so they won't realize it's actually not Padme, and the reason she talks in a voice like this is because her handmaidens can mock it. So any of her handmaidens, when they talk like that, sound like Padme. And anybody outside of her inner circle actually doesn't know what Amidala really sounds like.
Yeah.
Because
this sounds very much like the Bene Gesserit women from the Dune novels.
Yeah, and like her dresses have like a mesh woven into it that diffuses blaster fire, and the reason that they're big is because her handmaidens can take shelter behind her dresses, and like they choose certain jewelry to hide like trackers and listening devices in them, and it's very interesting because it's just talking about how they weaponize femininity, but it's also just so nice to read a Star Wars story that's nothing about that's all it's about is these like female relationships. It's about Padme and these other women, and all these other
it's
women
Bechtel
are brilliant.
Friendly.
Huh?
It's Bechtel friendly.
I mean, it's so good. It's amazing, and I'm about halfway through it. I've been really enjoying reading Queen Shadow. But it's actually really funny because
I thought it was about Freddie Mercury, so I, you know.
E.K. Johnson is definitely pulling from like today's political climate, because when Padme goes into the Senate, people are like, oh, she's too young, she's too pretty, her makeup's all wrong, she's not girly enough, she's too girly now. And like that's the kind of crap that she faces when she comes into the Senate. And I'm just like, ooh.
Were they calling her POA?
Huh?
Were they calling her POA?
It's almost borderline that. Like it reminded me a lot of what AOC has gone through. Like you can tell Johnson was pulling a lot from that. But it's really...
I don't know. He would have had to have written it really recently.
I don't know when, because they announced it last year. So, but like, there's a lot of similarities. I don't know how soon she wrote it, but it's Queen Shadow has been excellent. Like, it is a young reader novel, so it is a bit straightforward. But because E.K. Johnson also did the Ahsoka novel, so if you like the Ahsoka novel, I would definitely pick up Queen Shadow because it's a really great read. Anyway, my notes for Act 3.
Act 3.
Yeah. So remember all the Jedi bullshit about no attachments from Clone Wars that we hate? Kanan says that he believes in the Force, which is guiding him now in this fight. But I also think he's sort of fighting for his attachments and letting that be his strength, because he has people to protect now. Like, he has people to love now. Yep. And even though he thinks he's lost Ezra and now he has nothing but the Force to trust in, the Force guided him to Hera. We saw
We can forget about all that no attachments thing anymore. They're gone. That's gone. The Jedi Council is gone. There's nobody to enforce that to Kanan got out young enough that he probably didn't get shamed much about it by the he probably had no real contact with the Jedi Council at all, really, beyond anything that any Padawan would,
outside of like the occasional lesson.
There might be a lesson or a time where he goes for an evaluation, but it's probably something all Padawans do, you know. So he didn't have like the Anakin experience of getting wet blanketed all the time. He just started, you know, so he has no reason to feel that he has to, you know, be like, oh, no attachments. And I mean, that's been sort of thematically how all Star Wars has been going since episode one. It's been all about your attachments being your strengths. You know, I mean, the Emperor's spelling it out at the end of Return of the Jedi, where he's just like, your loyalty and attachment to your friends or your weakness, and of course is what.
And doesn't Luke say like, no, it's my strength?
Yep. So
like, while Kanan says that he believes in the Force also guided him to Hera. It led him to Ezra in episode one. So the Force gave him these people for him to fight for.
Right.
And I love these new kind of Jedis just because of that.
Yeah, they're more human.
Yeah. Okay, so all my blatant fangirl feelings aside, I do actually have notes about Grande's death.
Oh, really?
that are more than me just crying and sobbing. On one hand, I like that he chooses his fate, because it's almost like a fuck you, I'm not going up against Vader thing. Because if he actually survived this and went back to Vader, he would probably have been tortured terribly for his failure. And all the stuff that he's been doing to Kanan in the last three episodes, it would probably be like 20 times worse for him. And so I kind of, on one hand, like that he chose his death, because it's kind of like a big fuck you, Vader, giving him the finger, choosing to die instead.
Yeah, and it's weakness, too.
Yeah, which is my next note. On the other hand, he's been spending this entire episode calling Kanan a coward, but Grande is a coward. Like,
coward's a better word than weak, yeah.
Yeah, because, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying that what Megan said. At the end of the fight, when Kanan starts winning, there wasn't that confidence that Grande had all season. There's actually a moment where he's holding his lightsaber right before Kanan cuts it. And if you look at his face, he looks scared. Like, he does not look confident. He looks scared. And he's scared to lose because he knows what losing means. And, like, you can tell that he's just a coward deep down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, at that point, he had he'd also gone from being at the peak of coward land, where he's, you know, they've caught Kanan, they're bringing him back to Vader. He's going to get some brownie points with everybody there, you know. Mm-hmm. Really, any of the big failures this time were mostly callous. So he went from the top to all of a sudden everything's blowing up around him.
Literally.
And Kanan's about to run free. So, yeah, that's why I was like, well, we didn't see a body, because the way he was just so confidently was like, well, time to die now, you know, yeah. instead of still trying or whatever. Well, his lightsaber was roached too. So, but it was just weird. And, you know, and I know he's dead, but I don't think I bought it at all the first time I watched this.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he'll be back. He knew of, you know, he knew there was some exhaust chute or something that he could go. I don't know.
Yeah. So, but my next note is, because I had to separate it from my last note, I kind of would have to, I would have really loved to see him survive. And I was kind of wondering about what that would look like. If he had survived, because can you imagine if he came back and he was tortured and he was stronger and he was more angry and he was more pissed off and he was an ongoing villain for Kanan all four seasons, and like how that battle would grow and ebb and one would win and one would lose and they would go back and forth for four seasons. He could have been a really interesting, long ranging character.
It might have been too similar to the arc of Obi-Wan and Darth Maul in Clone Wars. So they were like, we don't want to do the same thing with Obi-Wan and Maul in Clone Wars. I mean, that had its own dynamic, but it was the same sort of thing, grudges and stuff like that.
I could see that. But the reason I would have liked to see this, because I talked last week about how Grande is a foil to Kanan. They have very similar stories with different paths. Unlike Obi-Wan and Maul, who didn't really have that. But Kanan and Grande actually have very similar stories, and they're foils to each other. And if he kept coming back each season just a little bit more stronger to be that long-lasting villain all the way through, I think that would have been interesting. Or even have a moment after this fight where he kind of sits and maybe redeems himself eventually. It would take a long time because he's a terrible person. But
yeah,
like by
know.
The end of season four, him being like, I don't want to do this anymore. And like,
you
maybe
might have
taking,
to reinvent rather than redeem,
or,
you know,
or maybe like being like an Asajj Ventress like story where he doesn't fully ever go good again, but he's not all the way bad.
Right.
Like
more of in the Hondo zone in the.
Yeah. Like I could
lawful evil.
I could see that if they had kept him around, either making him an ongoing villain to kill in season four or giving him like an Asajj Ventress like story. And mostly I say that just because it really falls back to what I've been saying the last few episodes about the Inquisitors, because his death is really poignant to me. Like, I think it's a very impactful death. And well, I think it's a very beautiful death, and I think it's really well done. And to me, I still get a little emotional when I watch it, but still, we don't know enough about the Inquisitors for it to be super impactful. And the reason I know his story is from the Vader comics. So this really gets me, but from what we see in the show, this death is not as powerful as it could have been, other than the fact that Kanan took out a big bad, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So
I'm happy with it.
Like, I feel like if there was more built into the story in the earlier episodes, or at least giving us something of more of his backstory, like this could have been a really big death. But I also think that Jason Isaacs is just a very expensive to pay for more seasons.
That could be a factor for sure.
Yeah. And my last note for his death is...
He comes back, but mute the next season.
Yeah, but... And my last note for his death scene is the music's also really great. It's also awesome that Kanan took out a big bad. That's such a huge moment for him, and he really worked hard to get to that point, and I'm just so proud of him.
Yep.
Though I will say...
Especially the person who just was torturing him. That's always satisfying.
Yeah. Though there was a moment when he turned off his lightsabers that for half a second I thought that Kanan was going to offer a hand and try to save him.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
He let go beforehand, but when Kanan turned off his lightsabers, I was like, I remember the first time watching this going, is he going to pull like a Simba to Scar and like try to save him or something? Not Simba to Scar. What's his daughter's name? What's Simba's daughter's name? Kiara.
I don't know. Kiara
to...
I've never seen that movie.
Kiara to whatever the lady Scar was. That's such a good movie. The second Lion King movie, so fucking good. Anyway. So I thought for half a second he was going to try and save him. Ugh, I ship Kanan and Hera so hard. She calls him dear. That's a note all of its own. My next note is, hey, look, this is where Droids in Distress, which could have seemed like a little filler episode and was kind of silly, is really important because Bail Organa's back, yep, and they yep. met him in that episode.
As we all knew he would be. But
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I actually forgot Bail Organa was in this episode, too. side note, I like how they booked in this season with the first episode being called Spark of Rebellion, and this one's Fire Across the Galaxy, so their spark became a fire.
Yeah, and the next one will be called Smoke of the Universe.
Siege of Lothal.
Smoke of Lothal.
Smoke of Lothal. Alright, ready? My next note is Ahsoka! Ahsoka is the reason I started watching Rebels. I talked about this some in my Rebels Remembered blog I wrote over on Geeky Girl Experience, but I remember this night when this episode came out because I wasn't watching Rebels at this time, and out of nowhere, my Star Wars Twitter just exploded with Ahsoka tweets, and when I realized that she was alive and well, like, this is what made me start watching Rebels that summer.
I remember.
Yeah.
You weren't a hardcore like me. I was already watching it.
Yeah. And, like, even if you've been listening to the show for a long time, you know this. But, like, to everybody else, like, Ahsoka is my favorite character in Star Wars. I have a Fulcrum tattoo because of Ahsoka. Like, she is the reason that I do this podcast. Like, and I'm here is because Ahsoka is the reason why I started watching Clone Wars and Rebels. And she's the reason I got into the Star Wars fandom. And even though I knew she was kind of coming to this episode and I knew she was going to be here, this moment is still so emotional for me. Because she's an adult now, and I grew up with Ahsoka during Clone Wars, because when Clone Wars came out, I was a late teen, early 20s, and here she's an adult, and I'm an adult, and it's not very often you get to grow up with a character, and still to this day, like, this moment means so much to me. I still get really misty when I see her come down that ladder. I'm just like, it's Ahsoka.
Yeah, and then you knew the shit was going to start hitting the fan, too.
Yeah.
You knew it's going to be a different kind of show.
Yeah, yeah. This was actually the point where I went, oh, they were actually connecting this to Clone Wars. And then it dawned on me, I was like, duh, it's the same canon, of course. Because, like, I guess Star Wars always seemed so fragmented, like, in the you know. But this was kind of one of those first moments where I went, oh, this is all one canon. And I never really had thought about it before. And so, like, when Ahsoka came in, I was like, oh, my God, this does connect back to Clone Wars. Like, that's all connected. Like, it's
yeah,
all here
yeah.
together.
Well, there was some question as to whether they, you know, in people's minds as to whether they do that just because Clone Wars was done before the Disney buyout. But right. But it was never, they never said it wasn't considered canon, right?
It was never kicked out of canon.
Right. Okay. But I still had my doubts whether they would use it or not. But when they started putting Filoni in charge, it's like, yeah, you might as well. And you have the experts on it right there, you know. So, and, you know, you have the writers and the, you know, the people who know those characters in the Filoni side of things. So, yeah. And the characters are very popular. So.
Yeah.
I'm glad they did it. I wasn't sure they were going to. I kind of thought they wouldn't. So I didn't know what to think now, but I'm very happy that they did.
And it makes sense because there's only 15 years between it.
It improved the show.
Yeah. Little side note, I can really see the Cassian Andor series that's coming taking place in the same timeline as Rebels, because we know that he's a Fulcrum agent, and he was probably brought into Fulcrum by Ahsoka, who started the program. So I think it'd just be really cool if, like, throughout the Cassian Andor series, if there's, like, little nods to, like, what's happening in Lothal and stuff. Like, they don't need to have, like, Kanan walk on or anything.
What if there was a live-action Ahsoka, though?
Yeah. I'm down for that if they bring in a live-action Ahsoka.
That would be interesting.
Or even if she's just a hologram, I want it so bad. I kind of would want a hologram, so because I don't know if Ashley could play the role. I only say that because I don't know off the top of my head if Ashley Eckstein does live action or if she's strictly voice acting, and that's because I don't have her IMDb right in front of my page, right in front of my face. But
I know
if
she's cosplayed as her before, right?
I think so. But if they did, like, a hologram, then they could CGI it a little bit and she could still voice Ahsoka. But I think it'd be cool if they were, like, doing the Cassian Andor show and you would get the occasional nod over, like, yeah, there's a cell over on Lothal or something. And I would just die. If that's all I would need, I would die. So how much did you freak... Well, you kind of answered this already. I wrote you a question. How much did you freak out when you saw Vader come off the ship? But you kind of addressed that already. When you were said that at first you thought it was gimmicky, but now you love it. And my last note is, it was about this moment when Vader showed up that it dawned on me, like a brick smacking me in the face, that with both Ahsoka and Vader in the same show, I panicked because I realized at some point they were going to have to meet.
Yeah, and when they met, there's no way the Anakin part of him was going to win.
Yeah, and so it was right about this moment when Vader showed up. I was like, oh, wow, Ahsoka and Vader. And then I was like, Ahsoka and Vader!
Oh, yeah. Anakin and Ahsoka together again.
This will
turn out well.
But that's all I have for this episode. Do you have anything else?
No. You ready for me to score it up?
I'm ready for you to score it up. Go right ahead.
It has gone up from last week. I gave this one a 9. I like this one a lot.
Nice.
It's not even for Ahsoka and Vader showing up. I forgot all about them. So I already had a 9 in my head. And they didn't do enough for it to bump it up to me. So, but like, it was already a 9 in my head before. I was just like, oh shit, they put him in this episode. So as far as and the way to sort of bring season 1 to a head and then end it in a satisfying manner, I think they did a great job out of it. 9 out of 10.
For me, this episode is so good. It's so good. It's the end of our heroes' little adventures, and it's ramping them up to be in the bigger rebellion. And we get Ahsoka back! Ahsoka! But we also get Vader, too, which means there are much bigger things still to come. And I'm so sad that Grande is gone, my evil boyfriend. But that is probably the one thing that's keeping this from being slightly higher to me, is I still just wish all season that they did more work with the Inquisitor. I think that could have been much better if they did that groundwork much, much sooner. And that's the only thing keeping this from being rated higher, even though this is already rated a very high episode. But so, man, Kanan really grew this season. Like, he's grown so much. To the point when we're doing our wrap-up episode next week, I was thinking about putting in the question, who had more character growth, Ezra or Kanan? Because I think Kanan had more character growth this season. But that's for next week. But they've all grown up this season. And this is just going to get bigger and bigger from here, man. So I actually gave this episode a 9.5 out of 10.
Okay, let me ask you this. If you didn't know what was... If you were just coming into this episode before you knew it, what happened in it and who showed up, and someone asked you, hey... We'll kill off Grande, but you get Ahsoka. Would you have taken that? Would you have sacrificed your boyfriend for Ahsoka back?
Oh, hands down.
Okay. I figured, hands down. I figured that was the answer. I just wanted to check.
Yeah. If I have, I will say, like, my feelings for Grande, a lot of that has come from me role-playing with Megan and, like, us writing fan fiction and stuff like that. And so I've really, and also the Darth Vader comic. The Darth Vader comic really shaped a lot of how I see Grande. And so I didn't have that the first watch through. So I didn't have like the deep emotional commitment to the Inquisitors that I have now, because now going into this.
Well,
again,
I'm saying if you did, though, if you were just like, Grande is my boyfriend.
Oh, Ahsoka every day. Okay. I would happily kill 10 Grandes for Ahsoka.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Grande's just the hot new thing, but Ahsoka's got like a lot, like all the seasons of Clone Wars books, comics.
I've had a decade relationship with Ahsoka Tano.
Right. And she was your first.
I have a decade long relationship with Ahsoka Tano. It will always be, Ahsoka will always be like, you know, people are like, it's Leia for them. It's Ahsoka for me.
What if you had your choice of like, one of them had to go tumbling into a nuclear reactor and it was Rex or Ahsoka?
It would still be Ahsoka. Sorry, Rex.
Oh, poor Rex. Rex.
No, Ahsoka's my favorite character in Star Wars. Like, I would mourn Rex. I would mourn Rex till I died, but I would still keep Ahsoka. That's very interesting. It is March. We should do like a March Madness of like, which characters would we kill and save?
that was the Ides of March for Rex and Grande.
Etu Hope. Yep. Stab. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on Twitter, iTunes, or the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show on iTunes, it helps people find the show. This week, we're not going to be doing feedback, though, only just because me and Chris have recorded two episodes this weekend, so I just don't want to get too caught up on feedback and give you guys a little bit more time to get feedback into us. So we're not doing feedback this week. It'll be back next week, but make sure you check us out on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page.
So we're jumping right to candy time.
Yeah, and this is kind of a long episode, too. It's a finale, so. Hey. I kind of want to do the Nestle Nesquik. It's yellow.
The Nestle Nesquik, okay.
Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a big jerk.
So our
friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review, because Dario is a flight attendant, and he's also Chris's code podcaster for You Didn't Beat It. So thank you, Dario. And so this Nesquik comes from, it says it's Portuguese, so it's from Portugal.
Ah. I wonder if it's going to taste like chocolate milk.
Whoa, it has a white bottom.
Oh, it's got a milk bottom on it, doesn't it?
Oh, wow!
It's like...
Oh, it smells like Cocoa Puffs.
It does. It looks like little round Cocoa Puffs with a milk...
Oh, wow.
That's good.
It tastes like, you know when you take Cocoa Puffs and you make, like, Rice Krispie treats?
Yes.
It kind of tastes like that with a milky bottom. Mmm... That's what it tastes like. Like Rice Krispie Treat Cocoa Puffs with a milk bottom. Mmm.
The little lumps are a little denser than Rice Krispies. But I think
they
they're still rice.
They don't smell as sweet as I thought it was going to be.
No, the chocolate's kind of dark.
I know. Mmm. No, this is delicious. As always, thank you, Dario. We love you. Mmm. Mmm. Well... Where can people find you, Chris?
Before I tell you where you can find me, this one would be good, maybe dunked in milk, too.
Oh, that would be so good, dunked in milk.
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. Let me take a drink.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a drink,
I'm
too.
All crunchy mouth.
Much better.
As I am not a fan of AMSR, I will not... let you guys listen to me chew any more than I have to. But it is candy time, so what are you going to do? You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website where we keep them all in the vault. All the podcasts. Thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And those are just the ones that, like, I've had something to do with. There's like 25 other people here grinding them out, churning them out. Piles of them. Piling up behind the Demanza Corp factory, the podcast factory. You can go there and you can see our podcasts. You can click on them and listen to them on your browser. I know most of you jokers are using your phone. You could probably do that too if you're on a browser, which you're not. You can go to iTunes and you can subscribe to our RSS feeds. You can subscribe to our RSS feeds from the website. You can go to Facebook to see what shows we're posting and talk about them and comment on them. And you can go to our Two True Freaks Cantina, which is another Facebook page we have where we just sort of hang out and talk, and all our listeners and podcast creators and everybody just sort of hang out and talk about movies and TV shows and comics and all that junk. What else do we have? Oh, I know what else we have. Yeah, everybody's saying all this talk about Facebook and that shit, all that jive-ass bullshit. What about Twitter? Are you guys on Twitter where the cool people are? Yes, we are. Yes, we are on Twitter.
What? You're not on Twitter.
Not me. I have a Twitter page. I don't use it, and I don't plan on using it. I hate it. I hate it. It's stupid. But Two True Freaks are on Twitter, and it's not me. It is the secretive, the always in the shadows, but controlling everything, the evil mastermind, Gene, the podcasting machine.
I'm gonna whip out my air guitar. Pew, 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 pew.
Gene, who consumes every podcast in the universe, listening to it at over 2,000 times speed, cycling it through his brain like he was a router, like a human browser, like a human Ethernet cable. That's Gene. Gene, the podcasting machine. But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope? This whole Gene stuff gets more surreal as time goes on. I like it.
Well, you can
that
find me.
That was an evil laugh. Whoa.
That's true. I do have an occasional evil laugh. Oh. You can find me at JS and Jedi. I am a cool kid, and I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. I actually just wrote a new blog today. So some stuff goes down in Star Wars Resistance, and I wrote a post in defense of Tam. And that's all I will say without having to spoil the finale. Something happens with Tam, and I defended her. So I just wrote that today on geekygirlexperience.com. And you can also find me on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short. I write fan fiction on there. My name on there is Chaos Lydia, and I have a fan fiction called Forces of Gravity. I also have another one called The Lucky Leku, which I just finished chapter 2. I'm waiting for Megan to edit it for me. But it's about Callus going undercover in a boy band, because one of them is a rebel spy. Forces of Gravity is a Thrawn fan fiction. I guess I should say that. So
can you have the Space Grammys in it?
You know, I haven't thought about that, so maybe
can they go on the Space Mask Singer?
No, it's not going to actually be that long of a fan fiction. I think, unlike Forces of Gravity, which is 20 chapters, and I'm just finishing the first part.
Are they going to meet Cy Snoodles?
No. I don't foresee Lucky Leku being a very long fanfic at all. It's just a little fun side project as I'm hitting writer's block with Forces of Gravity. But anyway, that's where you can find me. Oh my god, Chris, I have to do my first Callus evolution.
Yeah, it's coming up next week, so get on that.
Oh my god, I'm not prepared for that. Because I'm so used to doing Rex evolutions from Clone Wars in our season recaps.
We're going to have to come up with all new questions, like, for this. We got all new characters. It's going to be... This one, I think, will be the easiest one for like, coming up with new questions and stuff. Because a lot of times, once we come up with that basic first season set of questions, we sort of build off those. There's always one or two of those questions that end up being
repeated,
sort of sticking around, and you want to keep checking up on them. So it'll be interesting.
I'm going to have to find those outlines. That's like well over 6 months ago.
Yeah.
I have to dig through my Google Docs for those. But yeah,
we'll be hard at work.
But I'm excited. If you've never done one of our season recaps, they're a lot of fun. So I'm very excited for next week. I would suggest for you to go back and listen to one of our season recaps from Clone Wars so you know what a Rexvolution is, if you've never listened to one before. The Season 4 Rexvolution. Listen to the Season 4 recap. That was probably my best Rexvolution because it had Umbara, and I think that was the one that was like 40 minutes long.
It was pretty long. They were all fairly lengthy.
But that one was my best one, was the Season 4 one. So, all right, you guys, we did it! We finished Season 1 of Rebels!
Yep, that was fast.
Yay! We're just gonna go up and beyond from here. Let's go! But next week, because this episode's over. Bye!
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.